You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings and welcome to a Fireside Chat. My guest tonight is Lisa Raphael. Lisa is a spiritual elder, transformational holistic healer, musician, and author whose journey spans many timelines, dimensions, and galaxies. With graduate degrees in music, psychology, and counseling, Lisa gave up a 30-year psychotherapy practice to walk her talk and talk her walk in service of spirit. From her beginnings as a refugee child to her peak experience on Mount Sinai, she has not ceased in her quest for oneness with Source. So let's meet Lisa now. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
You have the fire going?
You're a little light on my side. It's a little difficult to hear you.
Okay. I'll get as close as I can to the... Is that better?
It's a little bit better. I'll just... strain a little.
Well, I'll try and speak louder.
Okay, good. Let's go back in time, because I don't know an awful lot about you, and find out, you know, how you had a very difficult upbringing, and how and when did your spiritual journey begin?
Well, my conscious spiritual journey began probably around the time I turned 50. And I realized that the ways I was defining myself in the world simply left something missing. And so I really went looking for what was missing. And that eventually drew me out of whatever I thought was a satisfying life with a family, and eventually out of my practice. And then, you know, after a while I found myself giving up the practice and writing. But The earlier part of the journey was very important, because I think without that, I wouldn't have gotten to realize that what was missing was spiritual. I was born during the Holocaust, and I was a refugee child from Hitler. So I really grew up a stranger in a strange land with European parents, and, you know, in Australia, which is the reason for my strange accent, although it's not an Australian accent at this point. So, you know, all that dislocation. So really the first half of trying to find again the family and the sense of belonging that I'd lost. But by the time I was 50, I really had gotten the family back together. I had an extended family, had a successful practice, and still something was missing. So I wouldn't have known to look inside if I hadn't had the experience of knowing that it wasn't outside, and it wasn't in family of origin. It wasn't third dimensional, let's put it that way.
Did you have, like, an awakening moment, a particular special aha that brought everything into focus? You mentioned Mount Sinai.
That was really much later.
Okay.
The Mount Sinai was really fairly recent. That was, like, between 3 or 4 years ago. That was a more complete yes, let's say. Although when I changed my name, and when I was about 56 in 1991, and I did that at Mystery School with Jean Houston, a big ceremony, I took on the name Lisa Raphael. That was really a formal and then also a legal commitment to have spirit be the basis of my life. So that's when I started, a little time after that, I started writing. What happened on Mount Sinai was that when I got to the peak, and this was many years later, after I had finished what you call a God shower, like sobbing, I was really drawn to go to the edge of the mountain and yell yes at the top of my lungs 3 times. after I did that, I literally flew down the mountain in another dimension.
Huh.
It was dark. I was already in my 70s. I'm night blind. And literally, my feet flew me down the mountain. And the reason I know that is because some members of the group passed me at one point. And, of course, there's only one way down.
Huh.
When I got down to the bottom and saw the empty bus, I thought I'd been left behind and they were waiting for me. You know, they'd come back for me. And then the bus driver said, "Where are the others?" And everybody was astonished that I'd gotten down ahead of time because nobody had seen me pass them again.
Uh-huh.
So it was a little bit extraordinary.
Interesting.
Because when I got back, I thought to myself, well, now, I'm yelling yes from the top of the mountain. What have I said yes to? Because I didn't hear what I was being asked.
Uh-huh.
I just had to yell yes.
Huh.
And a year later, I was given to relocate altogether and come to Kauai. So I guess that was part of the yes.
Amazing. Now, you, in addition to that experience, you have had some contact with extraterrestrials, have you not?
Yeah, I became aware of that contact in about 1999.
Okay.
As I was tracing my cellular memory, and there were certain marks and signs and emotions that were beyond past life memory that could be recovered. And when I went on a search to find the origin of those symptoms, it led me to the realization that I had been and was still being messed with in other dimensions by some kind of aliens. And so that was opening a whole other chapter. That's only been 10 years ago now. But, you know, it all came to be part of the same journey. I think that the purpose of any kind of challenge is to keep us in fear. And that comes in different forms in our lifetime. And I think it's an ongoing universal journey to dig into and discover those fears and learn to get beyond them.
Do you feel that this is a particularly crucial time in our evolution, right now?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Do you?
No, hardly.
I'm sure doing the work you do, writing what you're writing, meeting the people you do, you know that this is an enormously accelerated process.
It's pretty hard to escape it if you're looking for it. You know, and even if you're not.
Other ways to explain what's going on, it's pretty hard, right?
Yes. Well, you know, I told somebody today at the store, I said, well, it seems like the whole planet is going over Niagara Falls in an oak barrel. And she laughed about that, and we kind of agreed that we're surprised that we've made it this far. And I would be surprised if we make it past 2012, which seems to be such a critical date that everybody is looking towards. Although, you know, I would say we're in it right now. Whatever
it
is,
we're in
it.
And I think the idea that 2012 is an end point has been, you know, we may create that because so many people are thinking of it that way.
Exactly.
Certainly, there's a shift that we're moving towards, and some aspect of that shift is going to be maybe more visible or dramatic at the date that's predicted. But I think it's more a transformation and a new beginning as an ending.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's going to be different for different individuals. It's like, I guess the way I put it is the whole planet is going to be moving into another dimension. Now, not every life form on the planet is going to be ready for that. In other words, you know, some of us are adapting and are doing with our awakening consciousness, we're sort of getting ready to be able to move with the planet
as
she ascends.
Yeah, that's, what I'm picking up myself.
Uh-huh.
I agree with you. It does seem that way, although sometimes, you know, our mind in its ordinary state wants to argue and, you know, try to wrestle out of it, but it does feel intuitively that the whole planet and as many people as are ready and many who may not have been ready at all are going to make the shift into a higher dimension.
Yeah, it's sort of like they say, like, resistance is futile. So from Star Trek or something.
Oh, yeah, like, beam me up, Scotty.
It's better to go with the flow. And
yeah.
At this point, the flow looks more like Niagara Falls, as you say. It's the flow.
Yeah, it does.
The flow is more like a flood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't really swim upstream, so, you know, although... You know, we have the salmon swim upstream, but then they're dead by the time they make it to the top.
Exactly.
I think it's a lot easier to just kind of go with the flow.
If they wouldn't be any new salmon.
That's right. That's right. Well, maybe it's
so it's both. The,
yeah.
The ones
a new
who,
form of life.
Both the new ones die, but the new ones are born out of that.
Huh.
Isn't
so, what is your sense of your star family that you talk to? I mean, do you get specific information, or is it just general guidance, a feeling or intuitive thing, or have you been given specific information to work with and share?
Well, yes. Most of the information in all the books, really starting with the second and third book of the trilogy,
uh-huh.
are what I call translations. From the other realms.
Huh.
You know, this channeling is a sort of an overall term. I think that probably inspiration, artistic inspiration, strong gut feelings, visions, I think they're all forms of channeling, psychic
yes.
readings.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah, I have, because we're not completely at one with thought, when we receive information that our third dimensional consciousness isn't ready to receive, it sort of bypasses. In my case, the channeling began with writing
uh-huh.
and literally sitting at the computer with my eyes closed and my fingers on the keyboard.
Oh, I can relate to that.
And the dialogue basically was between what I was experiencing in my life and then commentary and explanations of that.
Huh.
But every word, even the words describing my experience, was typed directly into the computer without my conscious knowing.
Huh.
Some of the spelling and punctuation was pretty weird, I tell you.
Huh.
But
I wish I had
it, you know, after I deciphered that, there was not a single word to edit.
Really?
You know, I struggled the first book. I don't know how long it took you to do your first book, but, you know, I really worked at that for more than 4 years.
Uh-huh.
Once the writing came in this form, once it was ready to be written, completely effortless and requiring no, I couldn't revise it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of like Michelangelo, you know, he saw David in the marble, and he just chipped away everything that wasn't David.
Right, and a little bit like, you know, people like Mozart who would hear an entire symphony in his head.
Exactly.
And he'd simply download it.
Exactly. And they call that genius, but I think it's just tapping into the now, you know, the eternal now in which everything is available to us.
Well, yeah. It's always been available.
Yeah.
It's just that we're getting more awake to be able to receive it. And we're just calling it channeling now. Maybe it was called something else in the past.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Well, yes, that would make a great deal of sense.
Well, it was called witchery if it was for women.
And many
we
people were
burned
for that kind of thing. Well, I guess we've come a little ways.
Oh, I think we've come a great way.
Well, we've got a long way to go, too, it seems. I don't know. Doesn't it seem like we're burning our bridges in some ways, that we're just kind of throwing bones over our shoulders in terms of our use of resources and so on?
Yeah, I think it's, of course we are. I mean, Well, that simply means we're really going with the flood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we're going to need to have a different way to sustain ourselves other than raping the earth.
Yes, yes. Now, some people mention the possibility of stargates opening up as we approach a specific time window. Does that resonate with you at all, that there's going to be some kind of super galactic wave of energy that's going to be coming in some kind of pulses or waves that will change everything?
I think that's already happening. And
is it?
There are some of my friends who are working actively with helping open stargates.
Oh.
I understand that there's a large stargate here on Kauai.
Oh.
I don't know if you've had that experience, but different ones of us are being called to specific areas on the globe.
Uh-huh.
A little bit like me, not having any idea why that's where they're supposed to relocate.
Right,
I think it's
right.
like the soul families coming together, and they're probably galactic families.
Yes. It does seem that, you know, for instance, I mean, I'm here in Northern California, and it seems like I've just been kind of planted here, and that's where I'm supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I'm anchoring energy for this area, and,
uh-huh.
but I'm not consciously doing it. You know, I've never consciously worked with grids or stargates or anything like that, and I certainly envy and admire the people who do have those tasks and who have chosen to do such wonderful work. Because, you know, we're all sharing in this together, and when one changes something, the whole it benefits the whole.
Yeah, and that includes your allowing yourself to be where you're supposed to be, indeed, as I did. I mean, I came to this island not knowing anybody.
Uh-huh.
With, what, 2 suitcases and 4 boxes.
Huh.
And no physical means or knowing how
wow.
I would support myself in the material world. But it was like, there was no doubt this is where I was supposed to be. And in this particular case, my team was very specific about when I should go, when I should visit, exactly when I was to arrive. And I've been very supported since I've been here by spirit.
Wow,
not
that's wonderful.
Not in a form of support that would look like it in material terms, but enormous spiritual support.
Yes, yes. Yes, I've noticed that for myself as well, that, you know, that being in that flow, everything just kind of, the abundance just kind of goes, it's like a magic carpet ride almost.
Well, it is in many ways, yeah.
Yes, it is a magic carpet ride.
Yeah, and you just, but you know, to get on that magic carpet, like you say, you have to let go of all your attachments.
Yes.
To this physical world of duality.
Yes, yes. Do you find, you work with clients, I mean, do you find anybody who talks about having difficulty with having released their attachments to this dimension and as a result are having a difficult time remaining anchored in it?
Well, yes, I can speak to that. I've been something of a space cadet myself. So it's interesting because the work I do, really, I call it in-body work.
Uh-huh.
It's really helping people getting in touch through the cells of their body with spirit, the
yeah.
spirit that lives in ourselves. And that's the best way I know to ground, is to know that our spiritual experience really is recorded in our DNA just the same way as our emotional memory is. So, for instance, in working with clients who are very awake in their consciousness, doing the transformational healing work, which is basically getting deeply in touch with the consciousness of the cells in a relaxed state, in a state where your mind is no longer active,
uh-huh.
so that you can access memory that isn't available to your mind, your conscious mind. I will find those memories go back an enormous way with some people. Depending on your level of consciousness, you know, your cells may remember the source of the memory in your cells back to your childhood or inter utero or a past life. But I've had one or two or three instances here on the island where people actually trace their cellular memory practically back to source, to the first split.
Wow.
And so it's all in there. And how far your present consciousness takes you back has to do with what you're ready for. It's like I don't have to do any work here other than stay out of it. And staying out of it is hard work, of course. It took me 30 years of counseling to learn how to not to counsel. But, because we want to be in there interpreting and so on.
Yeah.
But when you really stay away and trust spirit, as I've learned to do in my life, which is why I can help, why I can stand by and trust it working with other people, it's amazing how spirit knows exactly what you're ready to know when you're ready to know.
Yes. That's absolutely right. Now, with all of us, it seems like since we're on a similar timeline, it would almost seem imperative that we begin to awaken a little more rapidly as the energy shift. Is that true?
Well, I think the awakening is happening more rapidly.
Yeah.
And I think it's being precipitated in some ways by what you're talking about, the growing awareness of the way we're abusing the planet and one another, and the financial distress and crash, which is inevitable, we just don't know when.
Right.
Really means that, like it or not, more people are going to need to know what's of real value.
Yes, yes.
Not, and it's not dollars. And
absolutely
it's not how many
not.
Possessions you have, or what kind of car you have, or what clothes you're wearing.
Exactly. And our whole society and everything is geared towards, the most superficial elements and maintaining a consumer society.
Uh-huh.
So we're just totally dazzled by, the stars, what they're doing, and everything is sales, sales, sales. I mean, it's so frustrating to see this going on all the time. And, of course, all you can do is shut off your television set and, turn off your computer. But even then, then you can't leave your house because there's, all the advertising going on and people running around with cell phones in their ears. And it seems that something really big has to kind of snap us out of our daydream.
Well, I one of the nice things on Kauai is that there are no billboards, which means you can actually drive around the island and see nature instead of big ads. TV is something you can choose not to have. I haven't had TV for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And in terms of the internet, you choose what you look at.
Yes, of course.
And you can fast forward if there's an ad on there before a news item that you want. So, it is something you can choose to stay apart from. It's obviously much more difficult on the mainland because you drive around and the ads are everywhere. They're in your face, right?
Yeah.
On the billboards, on vehicles. But, when you can't afford it anymore, again, you have to find a way to deal with, I'm supposed to have this and I can't afford it. What do I do?
Yes, and what's important? Are these things important? And people are beginning to question, I think, what is of value? And, it always seems to boil down to the same things as far as I can tell, a family, friendship, love, your relationship to your animals and the nature and the rest of it.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's
so,
really
the more
for
we
one
open
another,
up our
respect
hearts,
for the earth.
Yes, absolutely.
And really sharing without judgment.
Yes, absolutely. Now, in your books, tell me a little bit about what you'd like to share about your books. Is there something that you'd like to share that would help us to understand your writing a little bit better?
Well, let's see. I began with the first book, O Becoming One,
uh-huh.
Transformation Beyond Survival, the title really speaks to it. It's really the story of how I went through the different layers that had to do with survival consciousness to find that center within that is the all, that is, some people call God, I call it the creation, because it's still going on. And then after I had, it's interesting, you asked how people deal with it. After I had done the transformation, then I was given the next book, which was called, Oh, Becoming Other, Survival Beyond Transformation. And that's exactly, now you've transformed. Now how do you survive the transformation?
Oh, that's good. I like that one.
And so the second book is when the direct channeling began, where the Brotherhood of Light channeled some information to me about the different consciousness bodies, the other dimensions.
Oh.
The other is that part of us that is like the third eye, that is the observer, and really gave me a lot of information in the context of my struggle to understand everyday things in this new way.
Wow.
So then the third book in the trilogy, of course, is Becoming One with the Other, Handbook for the New Millennium.
Oh.
And in the third book, I continued with my investigation, and that's the point where I became aware of the extraterrestrial influence.
Uh-huh.
And again, through that, I came to understand something about my own star origins, because my star origins had everything to do with the less than benevolent interference.
Oh, really?
By other extraterrestrials. It was really all part of trying to keep me from my journey or my mission on behalf of the star family.
That sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, there's many levels in third dimension and in other dimensions. As I said before, of energies trying to keep us stuck in this world of polarities, of good, bad, you know, this is good, this is bad, hope and fear, you know, all these polarities.
Yes, yeah.
Which keeps us from rising above it and transcending. And so the third book, then, is about transcending the duality of survival and transformation. That itself becomes a duality. And the evolvement we're talking about, working towards 2012, and which I call the fourth eye, which is my spiritual primer, has to do with recognizing the polarities and moving beyond them, so that we can really see good and bad, dark and light, as, if you like, reflections of source.
Uh-huh.
And encompass all of it in what I term compassionate witnessing. Yeah.
Now, some people have referred to this particular planet as being in a quarantine. Is that something that resonates for you?
You know, I really don't know anything for sure other than what comes through my own direct translation, and even that I am told to question.
Right.
In fact, one of the funniest things in this last book, in the Princess book, when my guides were explaining about time and dimensions and everything else, they sent me in block letters, believe nothing, including what is coming through this scribe, Lisa Raphael.
Oh, I like that one.
And basically, it's a warning to me and to other people to listen to all the theories and all the different information people get.
Yes,
but only
I like
believe
that.
What really resonates deeply in your own knowing.
Yes. Well,
I think that's another very important transition now, to go away from listening to gurus and experts.
Oh, yeah.
And giving them, if it doesn't fit, don't wear it. You know, don't take it on. If it makes you afraid, don't put it on.
Absolutely.
If it makes you feel too good, like, you know, instant sugar, question it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if it's something to be worshipped, then question even more.
Yeah. In other words, really learn to know your own system of processing and translating the information. That way you can source out, you can discriminate.
Right.
What's coming from your wishful thinking or your imagination, and what's really true for you.
Now, you mentioned that there were negative forces trying to keep everything kind of stuck in duality.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Are those negative polarity beings in a slightly higher density, or?
Well, I think that there are, ever since the split from source, which encompasses everything,
right,
the creation itself, there have been different choices made.
Yeah.
And the same way as some people choose to be bandits and other people choose to be honest, some people choose to serve themselves in a very egoistic way. Other people choose to be in service of others, of all.
Right.
So those choices are also made on the dimensions of reality that are both higher and lower in dimension.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, there are powerful forces of both orientations all the way through, including off the planet in other galaxies.
Right.
And they're all, everybody wants to do their own agenda.
Right. Yes, it does seem that way.
So it's the same kind of choices on different levels.
Now, doesn't service to self have a limitation in terms of how high it can ascend in the dimensions?
I wouldn't know that. I think the creation is the only one who would know that.
Oh, darn.
But
I thought you'd have an answer for it.
That the very nature, what I've been given, is that the very nature of the service to self energy is contraction.
Yeah.
And servants to self is basically expansion. So that in the long run, this is why in many ways the light, in terms of the number of so-called light workers, we may not need the same number of light workers in terms of numbers as we know it to counteract all the wars and negativity and rape of the planet and so on. Because the inherent strength or value or energy of the light is an expansive one. So in the long run, who knows what happens.
Well, we'll find out within our lifetime, wouldn't you think? That's my feeling about it.
Well, it depends on how long you think of as a lifetime. I have the language of light around my logo, which is a soul portrait, and I had that done by a visionary artist many years ago, and neither she nor I nor all the people I would show these symbols to, nobody could identify them. And finally somebody came along and identified them each as a language from a different galaxy and added that I've been in all of them. Well, at that point, I felt that the lifetime, this lifetime is really nothing in terms of how long we have to go.
Right.
So it's, you mean in this physical lifetime, like with what we call a normal lifetime? I don't know. I don't know how, what we're going to witness. I really don't know. I think that's the fun of it. Everybody's guessing what's going to happen. We're shifting, we're going down the falls and this in the barrel. What happens when we're, are we really in a barrel? Are we just going down the falls?
Yeah. I don't know either.
Yeah. I keep on thinking, what is that expression? They have you over a barrel? Isn't that colloquial expression? Yeah, so it's all guesswork, basically. And all the different predictions from the most highly evolved and highly intuitive people are in the end just translations of information which is not given in language, into the language that that particular person receiving the information understands. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the way it's going is beyond words. In other words, the information doesn't come in words. It comes in visions, in colors, in sounds, in paintings, in symbols. And so whoever translates that information is translating it through, well, first of all, how do they receive it? Some people receive, see auras and colors. I don't. Some people do. Some people hear words. Some people hear voices. So whoever receives the information is translating into a language that they understand.
Right. That's right.
They then translate it to us in a language they think we will understand.
Right. That's right.
So we've got two steps between whatever is being transmitted, whatever wisdom and information is being transmitted, and receiving it. Then there's the other step of when we receive it, whether we have the discernment in our own consciousness to be able to discern what part of it feels right. Am I making any sense?
Yes, totally. Yes, totally. For me, it's kind of an intuitive process, and I don't. If I think about it, it's not usually very helpful. It's best to not think.
Well, exactly, because in many ways, it's coming from the high heart.
Right.
Or, you know, that aspect of mind that isn't in duality.
Right.
And yeah,
right.
Thinking can get in the way.
Oh, absolutely. You have to be out of your mind to
and
to
that's
do
what
this stuff.
And that's what I find so funny, you know, with our language.
Yeah.
You know, when we tell somebody, when you say somebody's out of their mind, we think they're crazy. But in fact, it simply means when somebody's out of their mind, good, finally somebody who's sane.
Exactly. That's how I see it, too. what do you see in the future for yourself in terms of, are you going to continue writing? Do you have any inspiration for future projects, or are you just being open to spirit and seeing what spirit shows you?
Basically, I'm open to what spirit shows me, and what it's showing me right now is that my music is an essential part of the work, and since I've been on the island, I've always played classical piano, and it's always been my own soul connection. But since I've been on the island, that has become very much part of how I express, and I've been bringing my words and music together, like reading from my books and then playing some pieces and then reading, and somehow the sharing of the writing and the music somehow bring the whole experience together. And then right now I'm about to complete a CD in which I'm reading the words of the spiritual primer, the fourth eye.
Oh.
And I recently received some new sounds on the keyboard to put underneath the words. So the CD will really be a reflection of the words and the sounds as they came through. And that's pretty exciting for me.
It sounds like it.
These were sounds which came through the way the writing came through, with my eyes closed on the keyboard.
Oh.
On the keyboard of a Yamaha keyboard going directly into the computer, and I couldn't hear what my fingers were doing.
Huh.
And so that was sort of, I knew it was going to happen, but it's still very strange. And anyway, the sounds apparently are what is going to be augmenting the experience of people who get the CD version of the fourth eye with the reading of the words and then those particular keyboard sounds. So it's words and music together. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, yes, definitely.
I don't think there's a lot of people. I guess I'm going to be 74. I don't think there's many people who have the excitement of something new coming through at my age. But that's what's happening when you let go of your attachments to what other people think. You just keep on getting new and new gifts and more exciting ways to proceed.
Do you feel like that we each have our own form of team or guides call them what you will, angels, higher density beings that are helping us along the way?
Oh, I'm sure so. And, you know, the reason for that is that it's not just that we're here to serve and be of service to one another. My understanding of soul evolution is that this is an intergalactic process. And the same way as, let's say we win, I hate to say this, like we win brownie points, or we evolve through helping others.
Uh-huh.
This doesn't stop when we leave the planet. So, for instance, in the spirit world, we also serve, and we choose who we serve and what form of service we take. And so the evolvement is always through being of service, but this doesn't stop when we leave this lifetime, because the soul continues to evolve.
Right.
Through many, many dimensions. And only third dimension, I think, fourth dimension, there's an option, is actually in material form. So when we become different forms of light energy, we're still evolving towards source.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm answering the question the other way around.
Yeah.
I'm saying, yes, we have specific guides there to help us because they're doing their service helping us.
Right, right, right.
And I think we... You know, in this lifetime, I'm sure you found that it's like when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that continues to happen as the soul evolves, that
mm-hmm.
as we are ready, the next teacher or the next energy is available to help us on the next part of the journey.
Yes.
Does that answer the question? I know I did it backwards.
No, that actually, that made a lot of sense to me. I'm sure it will for other people, too.
I hope so, because I know I did it. I turned the question around, but I think I wound up at the same place.
Well, it's all good, you know. Sometimes I feel like these lines are given to us, you know, when we're on the air like this and we're having our conversations. Sometimes I feel like I'm just given my lines to say, and you know, when I'm able to get out of the way, they come through, and I say whatever I'm supposed to say, and the other person says what they're supposed to say, and it hits certain people certain ways and other people other ways. And it's kind of a magical process.
I think it's very interesting, and I think that's why it's important that we each share our stories. I read the review of your book, Vance, and looked at some of it. Now, you've had your own very unique experiences, and just in sharing them, in all honesty, each of us, you know, because we're all different. So
yeah,
you might say ultimately it's the same information. You might say that the visions that inspired Judaism and Buddhism and so on, that the original visions were basically similar. I mean,
yeah,
it's all about love, unconditional love, right?
Yeah.
Well, then why do we have all these divisions? Because different societies, different people could understand this universal information in different ways, in different languages.
Yeah.
So, and the same way with us. So each of us has a different story. Each of us has a slightly unique, different way to express what life is about, how our stories make sense to us, and so on. And it's important to be sharing that, because we never know who is going to be moved by it. And that's not, I don't think that is my job. My job is to get it out there, is to share,
mm-hmm.
make it available. I think that's your job too, because that's what you're doing with your radio show, with your blogs, with
your
books, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And not to worry about who hears it.
Right, right, exactly.
What is it, the parable about sowing the seeds? You know, some fall here, some fall there, but we have to keep sowing.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yes, I absolutely. I agree with that one totally. And it's so funny because we never know when something that we say or do is particularly meaningful to somebody that we'll never meet. And it was just the perfect thing for them to get them through their day or inspire them for that moment. And
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's an amazing process. And that's how it happens for me, too. Sometimes I'm just, blown away by some little tidbit that just, comes from somebody else. And it's like everything just kind of comes together. And I think, my goodness, this is an amazing process.
It's totally amazing. I wish there were more of those moments.
I'll
tell you one that really blew me away. When I started giving seminars and talks, and I'd work hard on it, and there'd be only a handful of people, and I'd say, well, why did I even bother? At one point, I was doing a practice called Falun Gong in the park near where I lived. And the central symbol of Falun Gong is a swastika. Well, as you know, I was a Rifted Jew from Hitler, so swastika wasn't exactly a friendly symbol for me. But the swastika that is the center of Buddhism and Falun Gong is a very ancient symbol, is not the same orientation as the swastika that Hitler distorted. Anyway, I'm doing my practice there, and it's a very powerful, simple spiritual practice. And my friends, Chinese friends who were doing this, said, well, the university is having a celebration about, United Nations Day of Honoring Persecution, or talking about persecution. Would you come and speak to us?
Oh.
We are having this thing at the university. Well, I had done some research on the swastika because I was interested in this, how in a way doing this practice was on a deep level a balancing for me. So I prepared a talk, and I gave it, and there were maybe 20 people there. And I had one of those thoughts, okay, well, so what? 3 years later, I got an email from Germany with an invitation to come, to have my way paid, to come to Germany to speak to the different Holocaust memorials on behalf of the persecution of Falun Gong.
Wow.
What had happened was that my talk had gotten onto a website of Falun Gong, translated into German, and there were some young Germans who were wanting to have all the different memorial sites in Germany include information about the persecution going on in China, which is exactly what happened.
Wow.
Under Hitler. And they were looking for somebody to help open the doors. They found my talk, and I got this trip to Germany. Well, now that was extraordinary to me.
Wow.
Again, you don't know where the words are going to go.
Yeah.
Or who, so my little talk that I gave, I wound up at the end of that trip in the main street of Hamburg. They had permission in the middle of the biggest shopping center to have, a display, an alert about Falun Gong. And I wound up standing in bitterly cold wind in the streets of Hamburg at a microphone reading the German translation of the talk I had given.
Oh, my goodness.
Over a microphone in Germany.
Wow.
That was really quite extraordinary.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, Lisa, this hour has just about flown by on angel's wings. Before we have to go sign off, I want you to let everybody know where your website is and how they can find your books and your articles and so on.
Okay, I think that'd be good to have on there. So my website is www.lisaraphael, that's LISARAPHAEL.com. I have a sister site, lisaraphael.org. Basically have the same information now. They will have the new books on them. And my phone number is 808-346-5293. The website currently has my bio, excerpts from the published books, and a lot of information on my individual consultations, which are also available by phone.
Well, wonderful. Lisa, I thank you so much for being on the show tonight, and I look forward to looking into your books and finding out more about your journey. They sound absolutely fascinating.
Okay, I look forward to having you share it. Good luck with your writing. I believe you're working on a second book, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long one.
It's what, Ben?
I think it's going to be a long work of fiction.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm presenting my latest work as visionary fiction, even though it's based on direct experience. But I believe that that's the way it's going to be classified. So it's okay as long as the information gets out there.
Well, thank you so much. And I've had a wonderful time talking with you tonight.
Okay. It's gone very well, I hope. And
yes.
Now, are these interviews kept on the Internet? I mean, is there a way to get a direct link to it at some point?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we can work that out by email, probably.
All righty.
Thanks again for inviting me. If you know of other hosts who'd like to have me on, I'd be happy about you passing on the name.
Wonderful. Well,
okay.
Thank you very much, Lisa, and I wish you the best of luck in your practice and all you do there.
Okay. Likewise.
All right.
Thank you, Lance.
Uh-huh. Good night, everybody.
Good night.